This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
No wires attached.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Some big-name tech companies are involved in a wireless deal announced this morning. Sprint, Nextel, and Clearwire are planning to merge their wireless broadband units. The new firm will be called Clearwire. Sprint, Nextel will be majority owner. But other companies are loading in, including Google, Comcast, and Time Warner. Clearwire will focus on rolling out a WiMAX-based mobile network. A new experiment begins today for Walmart. It's rebranding its location in Garland, Texas, as a Hispanic community store. Stacey Vanek Smith explains.
The Garland Walmart will offer fresh tortillas. Spanish-language music, movies, and games will be the rule, and the in-store bank will specialize in money transfers. It might seem strange to rebrand a store when the economy has hit the skids, but it's smart timing, says Phil Lempert, editor of SupermarketGuru.com.
When a bad economy hits, what you've got is people looking for value. And value isn't just price. It's a combination of price and service and quality and relationship. And if you can put together that right formula for a big enough group of people, you're going to be successful in a recessionary time.
Lempert says supermarkets are madly trying to distinguish themselves. He says Whole Foods has done a great job appealing to the wealthy, health-conscious crowd, and supermarket chain Vons is working to match individual stores to local clientele. And now, he says, Walmart is catching up, catering to the booming Latino market. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Time for our morning wince over the price of oil. Ooh, $122 a barrel. But stocks in Europe are 0.5% higher. And there were some mixed results in Asia today. The Nikkei added 0.5%. The Dow was at 13,020 after gaining 51 points yesterday. The NASDAQ was up 19, and the S&P 500 climbed 10 points. Today, the group ClimateCounts.org issues its second company scorecard. It ranks the environmental friendliness of 56 major companies. As John Dimsdale reports, 84% of them did better than last year.
The average climate ranking rose 10% for companies in nine industries, from electronics to clothing to food. Most improved from last year were Google, Anheuser-Busch, and Levi Strauss. Project Director Wood Turner hopes the survey rewards climate-savvy companies.
We want the issue of climate change to be something that they're competing with each other on to demonstrate leadership to consumers.
Fast food companies continue their bottom rankings. Turner isn't sure why they pay little attention to climate change.
There's been a lot of scrutiny of the industry in terms of welfare issues, childhood obesity issues, and others. It may just not be on their radar screen. They may not be hearing from consumers the way other sectors are.
But Burger King, which gets a zero in the Climate Count survey, says it didn't get credit for new energy-efficient broilers and building designs that are just beginning to show climate change results. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Picture this. It's a beautiful summer day. You're in the park, lying in the grass, watching the clouds roll by. Huh, one of them looks like a Nike symbol. Another one shaped like the Golden Arches. That's funny. No, it's intentional. A special effects guy in Alabama has come up with a machine that can generate clouds shaped like corporate logos. Disney will be among the first to try it. It'll send up a cloud shaped like Mickey Mouse over Disney World. Francisco Guerra is calling his creations Flogos. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, May 7th on Marketplace.org. Directors from major U.S. companies like IBM, Microsoft, and Apple are in Northern Ireland today for an investment conference. Northern Ireland hopes to capitalize on its peace process by bringing in more American money. Stephen Beard reports.
Former enemies have united in government. The Protestant First Minister shares power with a Catholic deputy who's a former IRA chief. The two get on so well, they've even been lampooned in a local cartoon as the Chuckle Brothers.
We are the Chuckle Brothers and we're gonna have some fun.
But the chuckling can't disguise the divisions that weigh down the economy. Northern Ireland is a segregated society which spends millions of dollars a year keeping the Catholics and Protestants apart, duplicating public services like schools. It's a huge drain on the public purse, says Peter Sherlow of Queen's University.
You still continue to pay for segregation. Two leisure centres, two health centres, having to have one thing for one community, one thing for the other.
In some places, there are even two bus stops a few yards apart so that Protestants and Catholics can get on the same bus separately. Sherlow says the economy can't reach its potential until these divisions disappear. This is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today's the annual meeting for Pepsi shareholders. Earlier this week, Pepsi announced it would reduce the amount of plastic it's using in some of its packaging. But some shareholders think the company should also be taking a look at the plastic it uses for bottled water. Marketplace's Lisa Napoli has more.
Activists want Pepsi shareholders to give thumbs up to a water rights resolution, a commitment to provide access to clean water for all. Kelly Lawalier of Corporate Accountability International says we're so hooked on bottled water, she's afraid municipal water sources won't get the support they need, and those who can't afford bottled water will suffer.
Over the past 15 years, we've seen a handful of companies essentially shift the way that people, particularly in this country, think about water.
Joe Doss is with the International Bottled Water Association. He says Lawalier is off base.
It isn't a tap versus bottled water issue. Shouldn't be.
Doss says it's in the industry's best interest to have a good municipal water supply in place, since some of the bottlers, like Pepsi, use it as a source. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
Today we launch a special series called Food Fight.
In Haiti, riots over food prices.
Limiting purchases of rice.
Hey, winter wheat's up 25 cents. Corn.
We start with the most obvious question. How did we get to this point with food? We're joined by Duncan Green. He's the head of research at Oxfam in Great Britain. Duncan, why are so many countries fighting over food?
Well, food prices started rising in 2001, 2002. And then about a year ago, they started taking off. And I think the reason is there's been a convergence of different forces. So China and India eating more meat has led to a big increase in demand. The big shift to biofuels has taken grain out of the food system and put it into people's gas tanks. And the high price of oil has fed into oil manufactured products like pesticides. So there's been a whole bunch of things pushing up the prices of food.
If you had to point to one specific thing as a major cause here, what would it be?
Oxfam's really pointing to biofuels because certain factors behind the food crisis are good things. That is, people in poor countries like India and China eating more. That's a good thing. We don't want to stop that. Mm-hmm. But the switch to biofuels is really questionable on environmental grounds, that many of the biofuels that are being produced don't actually save carbon by the time you factor in all the fertilizers, pesticides, changes in land use. So you don't save anything on carbon emissions and global warming, and you put a squeeze on food prices.
We've been hearing the word crisis used a lot in this situation. Would you use the word crisis?
Definitely. If you think a lot of poor families spend 50%, even three quarters of their income on food, if the price of food doubles, suddenly they're in really difficult situations. They either have to eat less food or they have to switch to less nutritious, cheaper food.
In terms of this situation getting better this year or getting worse, possibly, what does that hinge on?
Well, it hinges on the harvests coming in and the some suggestion that the harvest will be bigger. I mean, farmers do respond to high prices. They're businessmen and women, after all. So there will be an increase in production, but not enough. So I think our analysis is that we're entering a prolonged period of high prices. So governments have to do various things. In developing countries, governments have to invest far more in agriculture. They've actually been investing less in agriculture. And the kind of agriculture they invest in has got to be the kind that actually benefits poor people the most. So we particularly urging them to invest in small-scale agriculture, small family farmers in poor countries.
Duncan Green, the head of research at Oxfam in Great Britain, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The consequences of the food crisis haven't all been bad. For example, certain small farmers in the U.S., their crops are fetching record prices. Land values are up. Commentator and farmer Richard Oswald says the salad days have been a long time coming.
I am descended from countless generations of farmers. There is no other job I am better suited to do than this. Other than the biblical command to go forth and multiply, the greatest force in my life has been the instinct to grow food. After 40 years of long hours and lower middle class living, I'm suddenly earning a fair return on labor and investment. That's without government intervention. Now I have money for health care and retirement and for travel. In the last 5 years, my land and crops have more than doubled in value. I've experienced wealth the likes of which I have never seen before. Money seems to flow from my fields in an unending river. But I'm a little frightened. Farms held by the same bloodlines for generations are selling to outside investors or to corporate farms. Liquidation dissolves friendships and families in a sudden surge of riches. Not all boats float on this rising tide. Higher commodity prices have improved my life, but they place a strain on those who must buy the things I grow. Small dairies and livestock farms are already financially stressed as feed costs eclipse profits. Still, high as the prices I receive, the cost of the grain in a single bowl of breakfast cereal is only about 2 cents. All the things I buy, like fertilizer, petroleum, and farm implements, now cost more than ever. Biofuels are blamed for higher food costs, but without that market for my surplus grain, I'd be trapped in a death spiral of rising expenses and negative income. If market prices should suddenly return to what I was paid just 3 short years ago, my lifelong career of feeding the hungry would be cut short by bankruptcy. I continue to farm, even though selling my cornucopia would yield a golden parachute. I have no desire to bail out, now or ever, because no matter how high I may fly, I always return to the earth I love.
Richard Oswald grows corn and soybeans on his farm in northwest Missouri. He writes for the website Daily Yonder. Our series continues tomorrow on marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.